You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The GSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Tuesday, it's a double header this evening with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth in Johannesburg and also David Shapiro, Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities, also in Johannesburg. Is it my imagination, gentlemen, or is there still a culture of people knocking off really early in South Africa and taking long lunches and cancelling preordained interviews with suckers like myself? David, I'll start with you because you must have had some rip-roaring lunches in your time in the old Diagonal Street days.
No, that was the old days, but you still went to closing. You still went to the closing bell and you were still on the floor when the bell rang. You might have continued the party afterwards, but you didn't forsake your post. You know, you had to go and make sure that orders matched or trades matched and so on. But the modern generation here, when you sit in front of a screen and gets boring, you just vanish, just gone into fresh air. And I wish they drank, but they don't even drink. It's just really boring.
Damn snowflakes.
Look, we do want to glamorize alcohol consumption, but on the other hand, there's a certain time that you do drink and a certain time that you don't drink. And sometimes, unfortunately, as my father said to me, Lindsay, occasionally, it is absolutely required that you drink and get drunk. So I may have took that to heart a little bit. But anyway, and you, Nick, you're one of those boring screen-watching people that go to 9:30 meetings, all right?
Yeah, it's funny. I've never been one to leave the desk. I mean, my career, we started with the bond markets. Used to open in London at 7:30. We used to sort of back up the traders, so we had to be there at sort of 5 in the morning. And the bond market, the German Bund they wanted to sort of squeeze as much commissions and brokerage as they could. So Eurex had the bond markets shutting at 7 o'clock at night. So my early career, I mean, I was literally doing 12, 13-hour days.
Well,
so, yeah, the ideas of having these long, lazy lunches at under sort of Broadacres from in London were someone else's imagination. I didn't really participate. And then I guess that habit's just carried on. Fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know. But yes, I'm not one of those. But I do enjoy a nice Saturday afternoon. But now, Monday to Friday, I'm pretty much on my screens, unfortunately.
Yes. Let's have a look at what happened on the Stock Exchange News Service today, gentlemen. And it's going right down to 7 o'clock. I'm just scrolling up here. There's a couple of results out today. There is Transaction Capital, Omnia and Westcoal in the first 5 minutes. Now, I think the one that most people would understand these days or look at more assiduously than Westcoal and Omnia is Transaction Capital. David, this has been a company that keeps on reinventing itself. Wasn't it Mr. Lamberti that was involved at one stage?
He was at one stage. He cleaned it up. Got rid of Bayswater, I think, which was a micro lender, for want of a better description. So they focus on two areas. One is the financing of taxis. Well, it's more than that. It's an integrated business. You not only lend people money to buy the taxi, but you repair it, you repossess it, and you restructure it or rehabilitate. I don't know what the word is. There were three R's. And refurbish it, yeah.
Yes.
So there's a great market for refurbished taxis. So they're making very healthy margins on that particularly. Oh, they insure it as well. So a very integrated model. And I think on the other side, they're buying books of non-performing loans. So they've obviously got a good way of collecting money or collecting debt. I don't want to make any suggestions around that, but good numbers that are coming out of this, out of the company. So much more streamlined than it used to be, but and you know, one of the market favorites at the moment.
Yeah. Nick, do you concur with that?
Yeah, I concur. I mean, it was only 5 years ago the stock was sort of under 8 or under 7 rand a share, and it's now close to 22. And yeah, now I concur. It's just a very well-run business. Though I do have to wonder how much more margin, how much more fat they can squeeze out of it with inflation where it is and commuters feeling the pinch a little bit. And I think they even made reference into something in their statements about being mindful of the commuters, etc., with fares. But until then, I mean, solid and nice to see a bit of a dividend increase, 61 cents a share out, and solid. I know a couple of guys in our office here are our favorites of this, and a nice result today.
Yes, indeed. And the share price.
And bucking the trend, might add. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a 15-minute delayed screen, as you both know, but it's around about 5% when I last looked. Can you give us the update there, please, Nick?
Yeah, up 1.88%, so R21.73. So knocked a little bit into the auction, but still saying that for the market was weak all round, so still bucking the trend. Decent results.
On the other side of the coin, David Shapiro, Omnia Holdings Limited. The salient features, when you don't see headline earnings per share up 22% or something, you know that there's something wrong. Management delivery on the short-term stabilization plan. Oversubscribed rights offer of $2 billion was successfully concluded. Well done to them. Revenue was up 1%, and then it starts to get a little bit hazier for people that are not accountants like myself, but you are.
Yeah.
When you look at these numbers, what do you think?
Well, I actually went through them, and they made money in the top line. I was disappointed because they had a rights issue. First of all, they're going through a very difficult time, particularly in the agricultural side, mining side coming a little bit better, chemical side also improvements there, mainly because of cost cutting or better margins. But Lindsay, a little disappointing in the sense that having had a two billion rand rights issue, which is virtually recapitalizing, I thought there'd be more benefits that would flow through, you know, taking out the debt. They did reduce debt, but overall, it's still a difficult operational performance. You know, they're still battling on that side of it, and I think particularly in mining, you know, in the industries that are under pressure here. So the market picked it up because this is a share that has been absolutely punished. But I, you know, from my point of view, should I enter at these levels? Should I look at it as a turnaround? I'm still waiting. Mm. Not that I'd ever go into it, but I'm saying, hypothetically, I'd still hold back.
Yeah, we actually, I mean, I know our guys are quite close, I think, on the Sunum investment side. I think they have quite a big holding in it. And I think I'm going to be polite on this, but I think what they think of management and what they did with David saying, I mean, that rights issue was only back in September, you know, 2 billion rand. And I think the jury's out about, you know, how much management were responsible for driving this, but what was once quite a decent little business into so much debt. And as David said, I agree. You know,
Nick,
have they done anything with the debt?
This was 240 rand, hey? I'm going back 5 years. This was a 240 rand company.
It is. I mean, this is one of the. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, this is part of the JSE 90% club. I mean, along with a few of them. But it's just a really disappointing. I see it may be a little bit of bottom picking, a little bit of guys looking for a bit of bargain hunting here because it has bounced a little bit off the bottom. But sure, me, it's got a long way to go. This is down 50% just this year. So yeah, it's a long way to go, and maybe a little bit of a relief rally. But I'd like to see more detail and out of this business, and I guess also this agricultural business, David, you know, with the drought and everything as well, not an easy place, you know, to be at the moment.
It's not easy to read this statement right at the end as well. It says Omnia's vision. It doesn't say outlook statement. It says here Omnia's vision, and then it says the following: with a vision of leaving a better world, and a better world is in speech marks and with a capital B and a capital W. So better world is in Donald Trump style. It says Omnia's solutions promote the responsible use of chemicals for health, safety, and a lower environmental impact with an increasing shift towards cleaner technologies. It sounds like a line from Aaron Brockovich or something, but it's not.
No, it sounds like an agricultural version of WeWork. You know?
But then, no, this is the
same. You know what? They did have, their factories were at one point, I think somewhere down the line, they got carbon credits for their factory, which was the chemical factory, which was a brand new a business, which was, you know, clean air and highly revered or highly respected. So yes, they I think this is where the disappointment came, because they were a super run operation and was giving AECI a big run for their money, you know.
Big
more or less in the same.
Yeah, but this particular type of explosive, I know we did a bit of work on them. This particular type of explosive, what they're doing, what they call the blended bulk explosives, is the one part, and the other what they call blasting agent. And I'm not a blasting expert, but apparently they were, as David said, they were world class. Their type of technology and the explosive they did was absolutely unique. They were, when guys were sort of looking at using explosives in their minings in Australia, for example, they would ask for Omnia's particular type explosive. That's how unique they were. So it is a unique world-class operation. So, yeah, very disappointed to see what
the other thing done. After the one sentence that I just read to you is also something I don't think they'd get away with, David, in the United States of America. It says in bold letters, Omnia is an attractive long-term investment. You can't say that, can you, in
no,
the States?
No, you can't, unless you can, you know, substantiate that, which nobody can. I don't think it's for them to make that kind of statement. And I'm surprised it got through whatever it
Me
did.
Me too.
Mm. Where's the compliance officer with this?
Yeah, growth opportunities, high demand, Omnia secures resources responsibly, which is all very well. But you can't put a great big bold statement at the top of a paragraph, or rather a whole section of the Stock Exchange News Service announcement, and say Omnia is an attractive long-term investment. So we'll have a look at that one. Let me go back to Stock Exchange News Service announcements and see if anything came out this afternoon. Nick, if you can help me with that.
Yeah, while I'm going there was a headline about 5 minutes to the close on Signia, but it was literally, it looked like a trading update, I think. I literally came out at 5 minutes to close. Signia headline earnings per share for year end of 30 September expected between 83 cents per share and 87 cents per share. I don't even know if that's a beat or worse or better. I don't know. That literally came through at 51 minutes past.
Okay, and Paolo's updating us on the North American Palladium acquisition. We've had Hulasani and also, what was the other one? I just saw Purple Group. Purple Group, 34 cents a share, and that hasn't traded. It's not exactly having a purple patch at the moment.
No, but they thought it was a great result.
Did they? Yeah, of course they did. Unfortunately, nobody else did. Crooks Brothers. You remember Crooks Brothers,
no,
David? It was the poor cousin of the other sugar companies.
Yeah, they do. I'm surprised they're still around. I'm not sure what they've done and what they do. I haven't watched them for 40 years. Do they? I don't know. I think they do other things as well. I don't know. Who knows?
Clearly not you. Okay.
You know, it's one of these businesses that just seem to be going, go from year to year to year, and we never really notice it when they come out with the results. I know their code from the old days was CKS. Is that right?
No, it's still the same. Still the same.
Well, it has a, you know, after generations on the market, they have a market cap of about 687 million. Nice. I would have thought that they would have done a little bit more than that. You know, so it just shows you it's probably like the old Hewlett's companies. You know, these were the sugar barons of yesteryear. So, anyway,
all right.
Profit for the period, if you want to know, is down 71%.
There you go.
No, so, don't have to look further. Basic loss and headline earnings minus 177%, a loss of 50.6. So,
that
explains why they're still a 686. Million rand company.
The dollar rand is 14.79. The British pound against the rand is 19.01, and the euro rand is 16.28. With the euro dollar 1.10.10 grinding its way to the upside, and grinding its way to the upside today are the indices in the United States. A really big move to the upside last night in points terms, anyway. But the Dow Jones currently up a fraction, but at an all-time record high. Should it close here? The S&P exactly the same, up a couple of points to 31.36. Can you believe it? The Nasdaq is also very, very slightly higher. In Europe today, it's all the same. I think it's almost as though people are winding down ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. Commodities markets, gold is 14.56, looking vulnerable, actually, only up a dollar. The platinum price is $4.50 better at 901.50, and Brent crude oil, that's up a percent to $64.25. David, you're a sort of US-centric type of commentator. It's going into December looking really, really good, the market. It may have melted up and it may pull back a little bit, but goodness me, the old resistance has now become support, and I think it's off to the races, don't you?
You know, that's what worries me, is that there's certain kind of sentiment meters that's, if you can find it on CNN's business, and suddenly it's turned green, which worries me, is that everybody is now getting overly bullish, which signifies or signals the start of the last leg of a bull run. And I don't like that. You know, I prefer this bull run to continue, although the news we're getting out is fairly supportive. And I think, Lindsay, if I could just add, you know, the one factor is that I think that we're into a period of very low interest rates, low inflation, that just might allow the market to hold. In other words, we might not show what we did this year. You know, we might not be able to make spectacular gains, but there's no suggestion that we're going to get a sell-off. But for the meantime, I'm basking in the sun, you know, every time that we reach new highs. Lindsay, just before you move on, I always look at the volume figures. And Nick might be able to explain this, but we're a 63 billion day with Impala trading 9.7 billion.
MSCI, I think.
Yeah, are you waiting?
Okay. And Sabania at 6.3 billion.
They're all going, so all the players are going
in. Naspers, okay, Naspers 5.7, Northern 3.9. So a massive amount of trade that went right through at the end, of course, with this rebalancing.
That's an all-time record.
The whole day.
Yeah, that's an all-time record high, 63 billion, I believe, Nick.
Is it?
Well, it certainly feels like it. Yeah, so, I mean, just to give you a quick summary, so we had this note this morning. So Impala Platinum going in, Northern Platinum going in, Pepkor Holdings going in, and Sibanye Gold going in, and then what getting booted out, so the ones that got deleted from the indexes, Netcare, Sappi, and Truers International.
And also there were some smaller cap stocks as well going in and out of the MSCI mid and small cap indices.
Correct,
so
massive
money going through. And it's almost like the last hurrah for the year. Everyone's saying, right, we're going to go into the new year having these new weightings, which is always a bit of a fudge to me. You press a button, you have to have 2.3% of Impala, so I'm going to press that button now and buy at any price. That's not the old stockbroking style, David.
No, not at all. it's so foreign to
welcome to index trackers and ETFs. I mean, you got to say, to a certain extent, these markets are actually engineered to go up because, you know, the minute a stock lags and doesn't look like it's going anywhere, they boot it out, and the ones that are running, they go in. So they literally are. Indexes are engineered to go up at the moment, unfortunately.
You know, Nick made a point.
Stockbrokers,
Nick was talking about sitting at the front of his screen for 13 hours. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that FT article where they wanted to shorten hours, and they said, they said they wanted to shorten hours because there's no point, because it's the last 10 minutes where all the trade goes through as the index trackers rebalance.
No, that's right.
Which you've seen now. So you could have sat at our market the whole day and done nothing, and in the last 10 minutes, these massive amounts of volume come through. Good for the stock exchange to make some money. I don't know if they pay anything, but the new lady is going to celebrate this, celebrate the kind of volumes that we're seeing. But anyway, it didn't
slightly
help the market.
Slightly false. You have to be in something so you're in it. Mm. It's not as if you're skillfully saying, I've got to buy Impala because I like the way that their PGM basket is performing versus their peers, etc. It's not something that is analytical. Mm. It's just something that is purely driven by somebody coming out and saying, we are rejigging our indices, so you've got to be part of it if you want to be part of it, which is annoying.
Well,
gentlemen, the other thing I needed to ask both of you, and I'll throw this out there, and whoever can interject would be most welcome. There's been a flurry of really, really big merger and acquisition and takeover activities over the last couple of days. First of all, the one that, David, you'll probably like is LVMH and Tiffany. Mm. I mean, the most expensive little trinket company in the world, the jeweler Tiffany & Co., with a massive history and beautiful boxes and lovely premises on Fifth Avenue, I think it is, but still an absurd price of $16.2 billion. Paid by Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy. Then there was the other one, Novartis buying another medicine company, I think for $9.8 billion. eBay selling StubHub, whatever that is, for $4.05 billion. So much stuff going on.
Ticket,
My question to you both is...
And TD Waterhouse as well. I mean, TD also with 20-odd billion.
TD and
Ameritrade.
And Schwab,
And HP saying no to Xerox for a massive, massive takeover also. Now, my question to you is this. Does this happen at the top of the market when you have expensive shares that you can pay for these deals with, or does it happen at the bottom of a market because of the enthusiasm for people to get together because they see the economy continuing and the market continuing to run? So an indication of the top or a start of a rally from high level, but not the bottom, but another leg up, in other words. Who's going to answer that one?
Cost of money is zero.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So for me, it's just a product of cheap money. I mean, with you know, with bond yields continuing to go lower, you know, negative interest rates around the world, you know, the US still bleating on about rates going even further down and zero interest rates, you know, the money's cheap. I mean, a few years ago when this first started, I don't know if you remember, Apple issued $1 billion odd bond or whatever it was at the time. And everyone said, why? You know, Apple got so much cash on their balance sheets. Like, why on earth would they even issue a bond to raise money? So I said, because they can.
It's so
cheap. They can issue bonds at 1% and for nothing cost to borrow and get money in. So my experience is it's typically nearest the top when people want to get their last sort of deals done before possibly rates going up. The problem is though is I don't see rates going up in a hurry in the foreseeable future. Uh-huh. That's the only difference.
Just looking at Tiffany is, I think, was getting a bit tired. It wasn't doing well, and I've got a great respect for Bernard Arnault. You know, he manufactures in the US, and I'm looking here looking at a chart. Tiffany is at $4.4 billion. It's nothing relative to Louis Vuitton, you know, who's I'm trying to see the sales at 36, 42, 47, 51. So it's not even, it's less than 10% of Louis Vuitton. It's a very small, relatively small acquisition for them. And it is an iconic brand. It's the kind of brand that people want to buy. So
doesn't this put them sort of head to head with Mr. Rupert and Cartier and the like?
No. I mean,
or not? Is this a different level?
Much bigger, I think.
Brand, yeah. You know,
I realize LVMH is so much bigger, but I'm just saying the purchase of Tiffany's relative to, like, say, a Cartier.
You know, Nick, you were in the UK. You worked in London, you know Bond Street. If you walk down those jewelers, if you happen to walk down the store and you walked in, etc., you had the commissionaire who would just look at you. First of all, he had to click a button to allow you in.
Yeah.
And you know,
this poor white trash coming to the store.
And that's the kind of Cartier, you know, or Van Cleef & Arpels.
Yeah.
They don't really welcome you in. And yet in Tiffany, it's a completely different situation. They welcome you and they send you up to the third floor where all the cheap goods are. You know,
where you get a little, I've got a set of that little Tiffany Bean cufflinks.
Kind of things. Yeah. So they're a much more open thing, but they still have a wonderful name. And I think that's a difference
iconic,
with fashion
iconic
today.
Brand, yeah.
I used to work in Duke of York Street, just off St. James's Square, and then we would turn left into German Street at lunchtime. Then I would often saunter off, cross Piccadilly, and go up New Bond Street and then Bond Street. And I would go to Asprey's. I used to like to go to Asprey's, but even I was quite well suited up. I was quite natty in my day.
And had
a nice, you know, nice ties and stuff from Turnbull and Asser and a suit from Savile Row. But even I would feel very intimidated by those chaps in the suits and the hats and the gold braid and everything. They'd look at me like, or they couldn't look down at me because I'm much taller than them, but they gave me this snooty look. I think that's part of the allure, don't you?
No, that today in fashion, you want to make it an experience to go in. So if you go into the LVMH stores and all these new luxury goods stores, it's like going into a museum. It's like an experience. And that's where Rupert is wrong. That's where Richemont is wrong.
A lot of their goods are going online. Like I saw a thing with regards to Richemont saying a large portion of their watches are now are going online. So you would select the bezel, the wand, the leather strap. You all select online, and I don't really understand the point of that. I mean, a lot of the high end retailers and luxury goods, you want the experience, the touch and feel.
That's right.
You're going into, you can sort of smell the history in one of those stores in Bond Street, and surely that's where you want to be. And I think maybe that's where Rupert's got a little bit wrong. I agree with David there.
Okay, let's have a look at the movers on the JSE today while we reminisce about things we can't afford. Northam up 4.25%, Implats up 3.4%, Motus a 3.1% winner, Sibania 2.8% higher, Transaction Capital up 1.9%. Did Motus go into anything, Nick Kunze? Did that go into a mid-cap index? No.
I didn't see anything there.
Okay, Barloworld on the downside, down 4.6%. Pick and Pay, also a 4.6% loser. Is that ex-dividend or something? No, it can't be.
I want to interject here, which is something that no one's really spoken about the last few days. Yesterday, our equity market was give or take unchanged. There was nothing in it. Our bonds yesterday moved 9.5 basis points on the yield at our 2030, which is the most traded at the moment. So that was like, that yield was up 9.5 basis points. Today it was up another 6.5. That's a 15 basis point move.
It's massive.
In our bonds, which I think, if the bond guys are normally a lot cleverer than myself, the dumb equity trader, they tend to be a little bit more on something. And I'm telling you now, this, the way these bonds are moving on the SA, is, and the interest rates, I think the banks and the retailers today, the interest rate sensitive stocks are playing a little bit catch up, because I didn't see one comment on those bonds yesterday. And for me, that was the big story. I said in my morning meeting, did anyone see the bond market yesterday? No, yeah, kind of equities are unchanged.
It was the fourth biggest foreign outflow yesterday.
Yeah, but I think it's a bit of nerves. I mean, sorry, David, just going on, maybe on the back of S&P on the Friday, a bit of a warning from the IMF. Maybe people are starting to take heed of that. Maybe they should be taking heed of it. Maybe the bond markets are taking heed of it. That's my comment.
That's interesting. I didn't watch them, but I've been shaken by the sell-off in SA Inc. Mm. Even if you look today, banks under a lot of pressure.
Big time.
We were saved.
First round was down 4% at one stage.
Now, all of them, and retailers, and so right across the board. And what's interesting, it came in from 10 o'clock to 11. So I think that was as.
So when UK, the London boys wake up,
yeah. As the London chaps woke up, they smashed this market.
The sell-off yesterday, David, in the bond market, and Nick, was the fourth biggest of the year. The withdrawal of funds from the South African bond market.
It's almost as though they know
that something's going on. They may have said, okay, at midnight on Friday night, on the 22nd of November, S&P did this. There was a reaction yesterday from the financial stocks in a fairly unpleasant way, but it's carried on today. So maybe people are saying, well, if S&P has done this, then Moody's is going to do that. And so it carries on and on. Or maybe it's just because, stupidly, in my opinion, the Reserve Bank didn't cut rates, a combination of everything.
Yeah, there's definitely some panic here, and offset by some of the weightings that we just spoke about, and action at the top end of the market, which has got nothing to do with SA Inc. But, we've come back. Yesterday also there was a slight... What's interesting is Naspers also under a lot of pressure today, and I'm trying to process as well. I don't know where their relationship comes in, but both of them taking a bit of a knock as well, which put quite a bit of pressure on the industrial index and also our overall index.
But and Tencent's been behaving itself. It's had a decent day yesterday, and we had that like a really good listing at Alibaba in Hong Kong today. That was up 7%. So it was a real sort of Far East tech sort of feel good, and not following through at all to process which you would have expected. Yeah, that's some very interesting moves the last few days. Worth noting.
Yes, indeed. And let's just have a quick look at those other ones on the downside on the JSE today. I'll go through them again. Barlow World down 4.6%. Pick and Pay the same amount percentage terms to the downside to 66. Goldfields down 4.3. RMI 3 2/3. And MC Group down 3.5%. All of these South African companies. Well, Goldfields, I suppose, not so much. But let's have a look at those. So they're Barlow World, Pick and Pay, RMI, and MC Group, all getting hammered. Was there any dropouts there, Nick?
There's no news.
No, we've got a smaller set. I suppose it's a medium cap getting into a small cap. As we took a look at a Cup, Cup Industrial, KAP, Cup Industrial Holdings. I mean, that share was a year ago, start of the year, it was close to 9 rand. They do a lot of that sort of chipboard manufacturing. They do a lot of the plastic bottling. They're just a classic industrial sort of conglomerate. It's a smaller space. They've got a market cap of about 11 billion. So I suppose they are medium cap. The stock's hard. It's down 50% year to date. I mean, back in not even a few months ago, it was $6. It's now $4. That's down another 30%. So it's just that small, that medium in cap space exposed to SA Inc. I guess people are saying there's just no growth locally, and get out of it. Stay away for now.
Do you know what else has been absolutely slaughtered is Nampak. We saw their trading update yesterday. Market took a leg down and took another 7% down today. Here was a company as well, which was really the backbone of the South African economy 20-odd years ago. Not only a manufacturer of packaging, but reflected the consumer side of this economy.
But is there anything other share that's on the coalface more of SA Inc. and Ampac? I mean, this is it. I mean, this is SA. Whether it's milk or bottling, whatever it's going to be. I mean, this is it. The stocks, I mean, those who want to take a flyer, the stock's on a PE of 4. I mean, it's got to be the cheapest. It's got to be the cheapest stock on the bourse. Right?
Well, all they're telling you is that maybe next year it's 8, and when the profits
it might
are
get
off.
Cheaper. Yeah, that's the problem.
PP Cement, another one, down 11% today.
Ooh. You know, you've I think you made a comment a week or two ago as well. I mean, how can a company like this, which is literally SA growth, how does this thing get a bid in a current environment with no growth?
I kind of feel sorry for them.
I mean, there's only so much cost cutting you can do. But until this thing turns around, I think the market's voting with its feet. You can see it.
I'm really disturbed about what's happened today on the markets. I mean, there's some real South African horror shows, and the bond market is the backdrop to that. So we have to follow this up. But anyway, the closing JSE indices, please, Nick Kunze, with a bit of volume as well, if you would.
Okay, I was going to say, can I end on a good note before I try to open the window on the fourth floor?
No, that would be inappropriate.
And make a mess on the floor. Okay, so JSE, just finishing up. So as you guys pointed out, not a great finish. All share down 1.22% to close at 56,053. That's down 700 points. The top 40 was 1.3% down 656 points. And going through to the basic indices, energy only one in the green up 0.87%. Basic materials were down. Technology down 1.64%. And financials, as we spoke about, industrials. Anything SA interest rate sensitive, financials down 1.99%. Industrials at the bottom down 2.4%. So let's put this day to bed and move on.
Okay, and the volume, please, was 63 billion confirmed?
Well, 64,204.
Wow. My goodness me, an all-time record high for the JSE Limited. Well done indeed. My quote of the day comes from the chat we've had about luxury goods, LVMH taking over at Tiffany's, and this comes from Breakfast at Tiffany's, and it says the following: the blues are because you're getting fat and maybe it's been raining too long. Suddenly you're afraid and don't know what you're afraid of. Do you ever get that feeling? Well, when I get it, the only thing that does any good is to jump in a cab and go to Tiffany's. Calms me down right away. The quietness and the proud look of it. Nothing very bad could happen to you there. And although it's rather superficial to pay these absurd prices for a pretty box and a ring that has probably cost a tenth of the price you're paying for it, there is something rather fantastic about buying something you can't afford, isn't there?
Sure.
I reckon so.
You know, I think there's something that makes you feel good. It's exactly as you walk in there, you feel very important. And as you pass the very expensive jewelry, they guide you up to the third or fourth floor, and just pottering around does make you feel. And what I was trying to establish is that you can't do that at a Cartier store. Mm. You can't do that at Van Cleef & Arpels or any of the major jewelry stores. And that's where the difference comes.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your analysis and some great off-the-cuff chat as well. That's David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities, and he was joined admirably by Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.